Welcome to Calcio FC, your weekly dose of Italian football culture. This week, Sassuolo Calcio is the latest to feature in our deep dive series. Plus, we delve into the Serie B top eight situation. But first, joining me, David Farini, here in the studio is Destination Calcio senior writers Dan Cancian, who's fresh back. Emma Gates is here again in London in the studio as we talk about Napoli and all the drama between them and Inter last weekend, plus a look towards this weekend's big Serie A and Serie B clashes. It felt like a win for Napoli. Emmett Gates, what do you got to say about that?
Yeah, David, I think, you know, when you look at the 90 minutes and how the game transpired, I think Napoli fans will come out, obviously, and Antonio Conte will come out thinking it did feel like a win. Obviously, Federico DiMarco scored that sumptuous free kick into the top corner with a left foot that even Diego himself would have been proud to call his own. And because Inter got the early goal, and then after that, it was just wave after wave of Napoli pressure, and the atmosphere inside the Maradona was building, the tension was building, and Napoli had the momentum. And we both said to each other in the stadium, if Napoli score, this place is going to come unglued. And sure enough,
we were trying to come up with a description about, is this place going to go up in flames? And you're like, no, it's going to sink into the ground. Yeah. So at the end, that goal, epic, Philip Billing. I think we were the only ones that clapped him on. Because the place was so tense. You could hear the pins drop. At the start of the game, it was very vocal until DiMarco's, way it just glided into that top corner. Yeah. Beautiful. You can't say anything about that. Napoli fans, nothing to say. It's just pure class from,
even
from Inter Milan.
We were with Neapolitan journalists and they were just like, fair play. Like there was a unbelievable free kick.
We were there with Claudio D'Amato as well.
From Goal Italia.
And also Calcio Mercato. And even he was just like unleashed. The Napoli and Italian journalists in general, they are not afraid to show their bias.
There was no neutrality when Billing scored that goal.
Yeah,
the
Billing's
place went nuts.
His first in Serie A for his new club. What a time to get it as well against the, this year's Scudetto showdown rivals. Dan, I'll throw it to you. Philip Billing's goal, is Napoli's depth getting actually deeper now or they still have an issue?
I think they still have issues. I mean, I think Conte will be happy with Billing coming on and scoring. But Napoli have issues. And I think they are slowing down. They've slowed down severely over the last 5 weeks. They haven't won in five games.
They've only lost once, though.
but you need to win games. You can only rely on other teams fluffing their lines for so long.
Well, Inter and Atalanta have been.
Yeah.
The Serie A title race is starting to remind me of a darts game when both players start hitting under an 80s for fun, and then they get to a point where they can't take out double 12 to win the leg. And
too much scotch in the lead up.
They don't do that anymore. It's very sad. Yeah, they just water these days, that's for another podcast. Napoli are struggling. Napoli are just getting by on resilience, which is what you expect from an Antonio Conte side, but they need to start winning. I think the problem they've got is that they've never been the most prolific team up front. When you compare to Inter and Atalanta, they've been scoring goals for fun.
Yeah.
And Napoli don't score enough goals, and they've started to concede goals now as well. They haven't kept a clean sheet, I think, since they beat Verona in mid-January, and they need to sort themselves out defensively because they just don't have enough goals in them. Lukaku is their top scorer, and he's not even in double digits. McTominay is the second top scorer they've got, and he's scored one of the last six, and he's not a goal scorer anyway.
Yeah. Surely they're punching above their weight, and that's something I want to get to a little bit.
They are, but I don't know.
Nobody picked them at the start of the season.
No.
I picked them as a wild card, like maybe they'll make the top four. That's my wild card prediction.
But I think that when you come, I know the count has been playing it down. We are not title contenders, all the rest of it, and I get it. But when you go as far as they've come.
Yeah, when you've come this far and when you see Inter and Atalanta both dropping points, it's like
There's no guarantee that if you finish second this year, you're going to win the Scudetto next season. It just doesn't work like that.
That doesn't work like that. We'll see what happened to Milan. And look at Empoli at the start of the season. Exactly. Were they going to make Europa League spots or Conference League? And now look at them in the bottom three. So
I think, David, just to go back to your point about squad depth, you know, I think I said to you in the stadium, Napoli brought on Noah Okafor and Billing, whereas Inter brought on Benjamin Pavard, World Cup winner, and Zielinski, former Napoli.
And that was size in the crowd because Inzaghi was able to turn to his bench and have world-class World Cup winners there.
I think it plays a role mentally as well, because if you're constantly chasing a team that can bring on such players, Like, you can only go to the well so many times and expect someone to
Napoli's stopped them twice. They've got two draws out of Inter this season, and probably no one would have picked that considering Napoli finished 10th last year.
Yeah. I mean, if Napoli don't win the league, they're not going to sort of lose, in inverted commas.
It's only because they've been doing well.
It's because they lost. Losing to Udinese is far more damaging than drawing against Inter. I don't think they're taken into a vacuum. A point against Inter Milan is a great result for them.
Especially when they were behind and then they were able to stop them from getting 3 points and taking it out to 4 points, which Claudio alluded to during the game. Napolitana Vera says, siamo il tifo migliore d'Italia. That means that she thinks Napoli fans are the best in the country, and they
Hard to disagree.
I mean, we saw that light show was up there with Bari's actually. Yeah. But the fighting spirit, Napoli getting one late after usually conceding late ones. So that's a little narrative that we don't usually see. They conceded late against Lazio. They conceded late against Roma. So there's four extra points that went missing for them. So, you know, that's another thing we need to think of. Can they get late goals against big sides to stop them from getting that 3 points? It's more or less a four-pointer right there in the context of a six-pointer, because it was a six-pointer at the Maradona on Saturday night, and what an occasion it was. We'll get to that. Emmett, Billy Gilmore hasn't started since
November. Against Inter.
And Gordon and George spoke about that, the two guys. If you haven't seen that now, go and watch it on YouTube. We've got Brits Abroad, the Napoli edition with Gordon and George. But he hadn't started since November against Inter. As you said, you got a piece out about that, the Scudetto showdown everyone wanted to see. Winless in five, though, as Dan says. Buongiorno's match performance.
Fantastic.
Yep.
And I think even Claudio said to us in the stand, he was exceptional at the back. He kept Lautaro Martinez and Marcus Thuram at bay. And he's been exceptional signing for Napoli.
Thuram got worst on pitch, according to La Gazzetta. We're reading that the next morning.
Do you think that is... Because in the past few weeks, we've said that the reason why Napoli could win the Scudetto was because they had only Serie A to focus on and no European football distractions.
Yeah.
Do you think we're now at the stage where they could do with the distraction? You know, because you can pick up a win in Europe and that changes the momentum.
Pressure on that one thing.
Yeah.
And a change of scenery as well, and able to rotate. I guess the benefit of being having to fight on two or three fronts is that you can get minutes into the players you don't want to put into your starting 11. And so look at players compared to last season when Napoli were in Europe, they could give minutes to your Zed Bins. They brought in a couple of midfielders as backup. That's basically what Billing and the likes of Luis Hasa are this season. They're not able to give them minutes away from Serie A, and it's just put them out there and hope strategy.
Because, I mean, you look at, you know, players always say the best thing when you sort of, you lose an important game or you let the big occasion slip through your fingers is the next game, you know, we're going to bounce back, you know, there's always the next game. And Napoli don't have that. They have to wait an entire week.
Yeah.
And you can see with Gilmore as a prime example, hadn't started since the reverse fixture in Milan against Inter. Now he gets another start against them. I think that's something that Conte wanted to play. He wanted to play with that tactic against Simone Inzaghi, because there's no way you'd think, as the coach of Inter, highest paying club in the land, expected to win the Scudetto, Champions League contenders, probably in the top three or four favourites to win that competition. And then you come up against Billy Gilmore thinking, well, he's not going to play next week. I'm going to make sure that, we don't have to worry about Anguissa. He's out injured, but it's probably not going to be Gilmore. And it was. So,
He put in a really good performance. I think Gazzetta gave him a 6.5 out of 10. He was one of the highest rated Napoli players. And I thought he was really good. He was intelligent. Passing was good. He pressed Inter's defence, and considering he hadn't started, he'd only played 20 minutes of Serie A football since he last started against Inter in November.
And he and McTominay worked well.
And for him to come into that midfield in a big game when it mattered, he produced a really solid performance.
It does go to show the coaching Antonio Conte is doing in Napoli is incredible, because it's difficult for the player to be chucking at the deep end, so to speak, in such a big game. But it also must be very difficult for a manager. Exactly, because we just said, you know, they've only got one competition they're playing in. It must be very difficult for a manager to trust these players to come in, you know, from the cold, effectively.
Yeah.
And go into a game with such big implication for the league title and, you know, for the momentum that you're carrying into the next games. So I think that's a positive for them. You know, if Conte can trust his players, then Napoli can get over the line. But
1 point behind, Inter 58 points, Napoli 57. How many points do you think having Antonio Conte has
contributed to that. And I would say he's worth 12 points.
I'll say that he's worth
probably 20 points.
Yeah. I mean, 20 points. If you see where Napoli were last year with a better squad compared to this year, a lot of that's Conte.
Absolutely, yeah. I would say that if you look around Serie A at the minute, Simone Inzaghi may have this Napoli side where they are. I don't think there is another manager that comes anywhere near.
Yeah.
Well, 19 attempts to 6. I know that's not a reflection of every game, that stat, but Napoli well on top there, possession-wise as well. They did play at home. It was tense. Inter got that goal in the first half, so you would expect them to want to sit back and just play for the 1-0 or maybe play on the counter. You've got the brilliance of Thuram and Martinez up forward. Josep Martinez in goal as well did actually quite well. Very good backup for Sommer, so that's a really good purchase in the summer. But Lukaku against his former side, under his former general, against the, you know, Inzaghi went into Inter post Conte. So now we've got the situation where, as you said, he's their leading goal scorer and he's the front man. He is the big striker that you want up forward. And with Raspadori behind him, Raspadori didn't have the best first half, but he was able to play off him a little bit. But then Okafor and Politano, the width out there also, and Gonge came on.
Yeah, Spinazzola on the other side. Yeah. I think Lukaku, he was isolated a lot. I think Gazzetta said the next day, I think he had maybe 10 touches of the ball all game. But he did his part. He tried to lead from the line, you know, lead the line. And he was offering support, you know, hold up play, bringing others in. But you're not going to get the Lukaku of, you know, when in his first spell at Inter when he got 30 goals a season. I think that Lukaku's gone now. You might get 10 to 15 from him.
And that's a good return considering Osimhen goes.
I think that's the issue there. The Napoli don't have the player who can sort of, if Lukaku provides 10 goals, you need someone else to provide.
And Simeone isn't scoring.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, if they're going to win the title, they're going to be winning the title by grinding out results. And I think you can only grind out results for so long.
Well, surely David Neres' return will be a massive boost when he's
massive.
Back. Creativity on that left. He can go back to the 4-4-3 or the 4-3-3, I should say. My mathematics out there. That's a keeper pushing up top there. But winning it without Kvara, Kim and Osimhen would be something special.
Yeah.
Because you look at this squad now, Kvara's gone. The trio that essentially gave him that extra boost under Spalletti were able to win it. Very historic. To do that now with this squad, no one's expecting McTominay to come in and be the difference, but he is that difference. And now you've got Neres as well.
I think it would be a bigger achievement if Conte won Napoli the title this year than they did under Spalletti 2 years ago.
Yeah,
just for the fact that Inter are stronger now than they were 2 years ago. And this Napoli side is weaker than they were 2 years ago.
And so nobody saw it coming both times.
Yeah.
I think that winning the league with this team would be a blessing in disguise, but it could also be incredibly dangerous for Napoli. Because as you said, Napoli, they have no right to being where they are. They wouldn't be there unless, like with a different manager, they wouldn't be where they are now.
And also the fact that Milan and Roma are out of form.
But you can definitely see them if they win the league, and even if they don't, but particularly if they do win it, you can see Conte demanding signings. He's already made noises about them not replacing Kvara in January. He's going to demand, and rightly so.
I think he'll get one. Look, they've always got Osimhen on the books, don't they? If they can convince him to come back,
bring him back.
Because if they win the league, they're going to be in the Champions League anyway. Then a lot of investment is going to be needed, and he's going to demand signings. And we've seen this before with Conte. If he doesn't get what he wants, he'll walk.
Yeah. Any chance of Osimhen coming back? I mean, I know he's having a day in the park at Galatasaray. Nothing against the Super League in Turkey, but he's doing very well there. But would he be open to coming back?
I don't think they need him. I don't think that Conte needs two strikers like him and Lukaku. Obviously, Osimhen is younger than Lukaku, probably a better player, more prolific. I think that Conte wants players like Kvara who are running behind and feed off Lukaku and make those runs, and Osimhen doesn't do that. Because you either play Osimhen or Lukaku, you can't play both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
Both.
I do think you would see in the summer Napoli maybe buying one or two wingers and then maybe another central midfielder, a replacement for Anguissa.
Yeah.
And maybe another central defender.
How long will Politano stick around? That's another question. But Zielinski's return, good to see him back in Naples.
Yeah. I thought he would have been whistled
as he
entered the field, but he wasn't. Was, yeah. And that surprised me.
We were sitting next to each other thinking he's about to get booed.
Yeah.
And he went on and people actually, it was a delightful little polite English clap, wasn't it?
Golf club.
Yeah. It's been an incredibly good pickup from Inter. I think that's what Napoli should probably try and do in the summer. Like these smart pickups, Juventus obviously made a living out of, you know, picking up players on the free.
Yeah. That's the Beppe Morata special, the free transfer market. Well, exactly. He was the king of it at Juve, and he's brought it to Inter.
Well, I'll tell you two players that they could pick up in the summer window. There was a player at the front called Emmett Gates, another one called David Freeman having a kickabout. So if you haven't seen that, go and have a look at our socials. We had a little bit of a ball juggling session out the front. We went to the Caffetteria degli Azzurri, the Bar degli Azzurri.
Fantastic bar.
Yeah, breakfast, reading the paper there. We went there for dinner even. Yeah. We stayed right next to the stadium. It was phenomenal. So looking out the window, seeing the Maradona right there. Also, everything is, we even saw the parking garage. Parking Maradona.
Is that the one that features in the movie where they drive him in with the Fiat, with a small Fiat?
It could be, actually. I'm sure there's more than one Maradona car park. And the amount of like shop fronts, the garage doors that come down for security, they're all,
nostalgia, they're all murals. Cells,
everything is a mural there. But Michael Arante says on YouTube, what a good decision to go there, boys. And he predicted it was going to be a good game. It was an absolute epic. So if you haven't read Emmett's piece about the showdown, we've got plenty of stuff on our socials about Napoli-Inter. Also, as we mentioned before at the top of the broadcast, Gordon and George unleashed in Naples, two of the best guys you'll ever meet. So Scotland and England represented. We love to meet Brits abroad in England. There's that merging of football cultures. So get on X, get on Insta and Facebook and TikTok and see those socials. Yeah. Leave comments as well. That's another thing we want to say. So Napoli, Fiorentina, Inter, Monza, Atalanta away at Juve this weekend. That those are the three teams in the title race at the moment, and Juventus, you'd have to mention as the fourth. So
six points from Inter.
Don't sleep on them.
Napoli at home, though, 2 weeks in a row, so that will give them a little bit of momentum. Inter drop points, we were there last time when Monza hosted Inter, Dan.
Yeah, it was probably Monza's best performance of the season.
And that night, it was Inter with a late goal to rescue a point. So that is the point that has them above Napoli right now. What are we thinking here? I mean, I guess there's no point making predictions, but Atalanta with a chance here to really create a gap over Juventus, third and fourth.
I think Atalanta are probably the side they should be feeling the angriest at themselves over the past 2 weeks, because they could have, I know the hindsight is a great luxury and whatnot, but they could have, probably should have been top of the league.
Yeah, you can't draw against Cagliari and Venezia if you have real aspirations of winning,
especially
the title.
When you're out of other competitions.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
Particularly when you've been scoring goals for fun at the rate they've been scoring, and they just could not hit the proper Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
And
but they're up against Juventus that just beat Verona, but lost to Empoli. We should give a shout out to Empoli here for the Coppa Italia achievement, getting through the semi-final. And what an achievement it will be if they end up getting relegated to Serie B, winning the Coppa Italia, playing in Europa League, winning that. What a script I'm writing right now.
They go down in Serie G and they're in the Champions League.
Wigan did that about 10 years ago, didn't they? They beat Man City in the FA Cup final, and then they went down under Roberto Martinez. So.
Also, Atalanta in the 80s played in the Cup Winners' Cup when they were in Serie B.
So. Yeah, the semi-final, I think, of the Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah.
When they were in Serie B.
Yeah. But I think with Juventus, it'd be interesting to see, because obviously Motta was, and the team were, there were like protests against Motta and the team.
You know, and the management.
Heavily insulted.
At the weekend.
Yeah. Milan and Juventus are going through the same issues. Obviously, protests from the ultras and both clubs. Angry at the management, angry at the players, angry at the coach. So there's a lot of similarities going on between the two giants this season.
Another one is Roma. Alistair McKenzie was on site for Roma Como. So he is representing Destination Calcio there, thanks to Alistair. So we'll have him again for Athletic Bilbao as Roma go into battle under King Claudio in Rome. A Europa League special that we spoke about last time out on the Calcio FC pod last week. They've got Dybala in form, Shomurodov in form, Dobbik scored on the weekend, the winner over Como.
Angelino was looking good.
They were able to stumble past Como because Como were good. Roma still with the momentum to get that. Well, I think it's 11 undefeated now. So they're steadily coming up Serie A standings.
Athletic Club are doing pretty well in Spain.
Copa del Rey reigning champion.
Yeah, they're fourth.
They're fourth in the
Liga. And it's never, I know it's a cliche, but like, they are probably one of the last few clubs in Europe where you don't want to play them away.
Don't want to play
the
them.
The Samoans.
They've already come to Roma this season for the Europa League group stage. And there was a 1-1 draw. So let's see what Roma can do against them. Maybe they learned something. Ranieri wasn't the coach last time. It was Juric. So if you haven't seen last week's pod, we featured Roma. And Alistair will be there again. and he'll be there tonight for the Athletic Bilbao game. Benito Lazio says all Roma does is dream. That's what he said on YouTube. So he's also a Lazio fan. So
it's been harsh, though. I mean, they made four European semifinals in the last four seasons.
Yeah.
And
they won one of them.
They made two finals.
Yeah, won one of the trophies.
So. I think Italy owes a debt of gratitude to their coefficient to Roma because of Roma's
Roma and Fiorentina have taken European football seriously, as Lazio are doing this season.
I do remember, though, the rivalry between the fans. Obviously, everyone has rivalries between different clubs. Inter and Milan have it. Everyone has it. But I remember seeing a documentary where it was a Lazio older couple that I think they went abroad to a club. I can't remember exactly which club, but they knocked out, this club had knocked out Roma and they thanked them with like gifts. And they went to the club official and gifts. I got to find that one. But okay, Alexa says on Insta that she loved the chat with Adriano Del Monte. He was part of last week's Calcio FC podcast. We spoke about Spezia. We're going to get to Serie B shortly. Football travel man, Joe.
A friend of the show.
Yeah, he's been on the Bologna podcast with us live from the Dalara. He says, class, the Rome derby in the final two would be, the Rome final would be too good to be true. Roma and Lazio, probably the best, for the best is Bilbao, would be burnt to the ground.
Actually, speaking of that though, could there also be, there could be a Basque derby as well, couldn't it? Because La Real, Sociedad are still in it.
Yeah.
And Athletic are obviously in it. Yeah.
And I think they're on opposite sides of the draw.
I mean, I find the current draw system very confusing. It's like, it's a sort of like tennis-style format. I don't watch much tennis, but
it's weird. We had this conversation on the weekend. It feels like it needs two or three years for this new format to get programmed.
So, because you can play in the teams that you played in the group, you can play them in the knockout, in the league phase as it is now. You can then play them in the knockouts.
Yeah.
Because of the way it goes with the top 16, then have the week off.
The top eight have the week off.
Top eight have the week off. The next eight, 9th to 16th, then have the knockouts with it's 17th to 24th.
Four? Yeah.
And then you can end up playing someone that you played in the group stage because there is, it's just one big group. So this is the thing that's weird for a lot of people. Joaquin in Florida commented, a pleasant morning listen for me in Florida. When he tuned into the latest, last week's episode, I should say, of Calcio FC, the focus on Roma. So you can leave your comments on our socials, Facebook, Insta, YouTube, X, and also Instagram. This is the Calcio FC podcast with me, David Farini, and Destination Calcio senior writers Dan Cancian and Emmett Gates. The Serie B race, guys. We had a man on site for the big one on the weekend. Harry was down there in Reggio Emilia at the Mapei Stadium, first against second. Sassuolo getting the win there over Pisa. Could be the decider, all but done now for Sassuolo and Fabio Grosso.
Let's be honest.
Wearing the shirt there as well, Dan, the Berardi. You know, we got that. That is the year that they got promoted last time from Serie B. That's why we've got that, because Berardi's on the back, number
2013?
2013-14, that's the one. 11 years they were in Serie A before they got demoted. So that's them. That's another club punching above their weight. It's kind of like a Cittadella where they haven't been around that long and they're doing quite well. Cittadella nearly made it, but got denied by Venezia in that playoff final.
Yeah.
It's done. It's no longer it's a one-horse race.
It is. It's done. The goal there was a decent one. Luca Moro got player of the week in Serie B for that goal. It's so important. Pisa fans travelled in massive numbers. We've got a piece on that Harry did as well. 7,000 were there in attendance. The black and the blue. We had the Pisa shirt up here before. You may have confused it with an Inter one or
you
Atalanta.
You were wearing it last week, David.
Yeah, I was wearing it last week. They didn't get the win there.
A tribute there.
But they will be playing Spezia this week in the second versus third. So on X.
Yeah, sorry. I know that we spoke about it a few weeks ago. We said Pisa were punching above their weight. I think it's the same dynamic that Napoli are. They are punching above their weight, but they've come too far not to actually get across the line.
Yeah, they've got to get across the line. That's a good point. On X, Pisano in Scotia tweeted, hopefully not in this league for much longer. He's talking about Pisa there, obviously, with his name. But yeah, I mean, a long time between Serie A drinks for them.
Yeah, 34 years?
Yeah.
It was in 91.
91, yeah.
91, yeah. Diego Simeone years and Larson. Mary Per Sempre on TikTok says, che spettacolo, bellissimo, questo video. Forza Pisa sempre. So she's saying we put a video up of the fans. So it was good to see them with those black and blue vertical stripes coming down. The
7,000 is some away
following. Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
To come all the way from Tuscany over to Reggio Emilia.
Yeah.
I mean, how long of a jaunt would that be?
Probably about 90 minutes, 2 hours.
Yeah, also they're very windy roads through those mountains.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've done those before. Our socials with Inzaghi and Grosso, go and see that because we put a piece up where they're shaking hands. You see the Sassuolo players also celebrating in the midfield and they go over to the ultras behind the goal. Not too many for Sassuolo, I might say.
They are the best club in Serie B, but their following is...
Yeah, it should be better.
Pales in comparison to other clubs, so let's put it that way.
Yeah. to be nice.
Yeah. We'll get to that. We're going to do a Sassuolo dive in a moment. But Pisa unhurt as Spezia, Catanzaro, Cremonese, Juve Stabia and Bari all failed to win. In fact, the only other club in the top eight that won was Cesena.
Yeah.
Jersey right there.
I know.
And what a save it was.
What a win, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Dan's got a piece on that as well. Jürgen Klinsmann, his son. He's got Jonathan in there saving goals.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite the story of the week in Serie B. I mean, him saving a penalty. I mean, I suppose we should probably explain for those who haven't seen it. So Cesena playing Salernitana. It's nil all, 7 minutes to go. Salernitana get a penalty. And Klinsmann speaks to the bald boy behind the goal and he asks him, where do you think he'll go? And the bald boy, a little kid called Ivan, says to him, oh, I think he's going to go down to your right. And Klinsmann says to him, I think you're right. If I save it, I'm giving you my shirt at the end of the game. And he saves the penalty, turns around, points to Ivan. Cesena go down to the end and score.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's just like...
It's one of those moments. Remember Zola in charge of Watford a few years back?
The playoff final, yes. Yeah. The Troidini final. Yeah.
Love it.
Cesena winning. They're now... firmly in the top eight, I guess, for now.
Yeah, they're sixth. Yeah, they're only 4 points of Catanzaro.
True. A lot of teams drew or lost in that top eight. Now, Palermo won, so they've just scooped themselves into the eighth position with their win on the weekend. That was Poyampalo with a penalty.
Yeah.
So we're going to see how they go. We're showing them again against Sampdoria this weekend. Rosanero Eng for ENG for England. He's been retweeting our live broadcast, so we thank you for that. Over in Birmingham, we know where you are. So we will end this segment with Adriano Del Monte's Serie B work. He's doing some more in Spezia this week. It's going to be Spezia Pisa, so that is massive. We're not showing that on DCTV. However, at the same time, is Sassuolo Bari, so there's two very, very big games. So Spezia and Pisa fans, don't get upset for not showing. We had to pick one or the other, and it was basically a flip of the coin. So the other game is Brescia-Cesena. That is on the Saturday evening. Saturday evening, late kickoff this week in Serie B. So,
wow.
This is the Calcio FC podcast with me, David Farini, joined by Destination Calcio senior writers Dan Cancian and Emmett Gates. We're going to talk about Sassuolo Calcio. We're going to have a little dive into what Fabio Grosso is doing this season. Their promotion is all but sealed to Serie A. It's going to be good to see them back up. They're very competitive back in their day under Roberto De Zerbi and other misters there. Another 99, another 99 on TikTok says, Grandissimo Sassuolo. So they have been massive. Fabio Grosso has been the absolute rock.
Yeah, I mean, they are the best. I think I wrote a piece about it a couple of weeks ago. They are statistically the best team across the five second divisions, across the five top leagues in Europe. It was a straightforward conclusion, I think, since the start of the season. Everyone expected them to come up. Having said that, you still have to live up to expectations.
You've got players like that.
I mean, I think the big challenge for them will be next season because the gap between Serie B and Serie A is growing just as it is in England, the Premier League and the Championship.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking of this earlier, and it's something I want to put to you too. Do you think this current Sassuolo side, when they go up, are they good enough to survive in Serie A? Say if they don't sign any players in the summer, are they good enough?
They're
clearly better.
I think they are.
I think they are by virtue of the fact that there'll be at least three other teams worse than them. When you look at Serie A over the past decade, at least one team has always gone straight back down. And in five of those 10 seasons, two teams have gone back down. That tells you how big the gap is between Serie A and Serie B. And the thing for Sassuolo is that they've got financial backing, which other teams don't have. The likes of Mons and Venezia this season, they were left realistically shopping for bargains at the end of the transfer window.
Yeah, and that's weird because Mons are did have a lot of collateral behind it. It was left to the Berlusconi family after Silvio's passing. So I guess net worth doesn't count for everything, but just a quick pop quiz here for Emmett Gates. How much is Sassuolo worth?
Oh, is it like $3 billion?
3.3. I thought I was going to catch him out there, but he's obviously read the show notes. So well done, Emmett. He's read this. He's done his research. I've brought him out a couple of times this season. I'll get you again. Don't worry. The owners of Sassuolo, Mappe, is the main sponsor. They own Mappe. It's the Squinty family, net worth of $3.3 billion.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry, just while we're on the topic of quiz questions, what's the link between Sassuolo and Manchester United?
I would say possibly a plane that lands from Manchester into Reggio Emilia.
I don't even know whether Reggio Emilia is an airport, so definitely they not. They do. Oh, well, there you go. That's me told. So Mappe, like Ineos, made their name in cycling, first and foremost. Obviously, okay. Mappe now are translating their success in football, Ineos. Well, that's okay. For a whole other podcast.
Okay. Well, I'm waiting for your 5,000-word article on that.
I have to admit, I was expecting a different reaction. Fine, that's me told again.
Amazed face, ready? Do a thong. So, 10th richest club in Italy. Yeah. Sassuolo, by the way, just going back to those figures. So the second richest in Serie B behind Palermo, Citigroup, obviously. But Squinty family in charge there. So they should be back up in Serie A. The current roster is good. Arman Loriente is joint top scorer.
Yeah, 14.
Pietro.
I was actually Gimello. Going back to the point Emmett made about them being good enough to remain in Serie A next season. I think I would imagine that they are probably one of the few clubs who can get promoted and hold on to their players because they don't need to sell for financial reasons.
Yeah. They don't. And they've still got Domenico Berardi, who's stayed loyal. He's done a Juventus Calciopoli thing where he's gone down with them. I guess he was injured, so he didn't have too much of a choice. And he did sign a lengthy contract a couple of years back. So he's got a 5-year there.
Yeah.
Six-time club top scorer at Berardi.
Yeah.
So very valuable, that shirt there, Dan.
And the thing about it is, we're talking, obviously, Dan mentioned about how strong Sassuolo have been. Berardi was injured for like 2 or 3 months of the season. And Sassuolo were still miles clear.
They did get Pierini, who was phenomenal last year.
He's playing a different role as well. He's mostly a provider. He's no longer their chief goal scorer.
He's like, what, 4 goals in Serie B this season? So it's not like, Berardi is inspiring Sassuolo to promotions. The squad is strong enough.
Yeah.
He's not playing.
And the Sassuolo fans should get behind them. If there are any Sassuolo fans out there, make sure you get in touch. We did have a couple tweet in on the weekend, so we thank you for getting involved. Also, the Reggiana fans, that rivalry there.
Yeah.
It was Reggiana's stadium in the past. It was bought by Mappe, and that's why it's called Mappe Stadium.
Controversial.
Reggiana are effectively paying to play in their own stadium.
Yeah.
Well, it was their stadium. They sold it. You sell out, that's the end.
Well, the Reggiana went bust sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s, and then Sassuolo, the Squinzi family, bought the stadium. But I think, David, we have been to the Mappe to see Reggiana play, and the support that they
have
is massive.
They do have the legacy there.
Yeah.
Even back in the days of Paolo Futre.
Yeah.
If you have Claudio Taffarel, that's football. Yeah. That's football heritage.
Especially legacy.
Back then, I know. Yeah. Michele Padovano, Paolo Futre, and did they have a Romanian player? Dorin Mateu to play with Gheorghe Agi.
Yeah.
Did Radicioia play there?
No, yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Sonny Olise was there before he went to Juventus.
That's long range.
Yeah.
So they finished sixth. That's their best ever placing in Serie A. 2015-16, two other finishes in eighth there. They were almost part of that Seven Sisters group going back De Zerbi days.
Yeah.
Back in the days where they could get a 3-3 draw out of Napoli under Gattuso back then, I do believe. But they do have it in them to go into the top half of Serie A, and we'll see if they can.
Do you think they could do that? I mean, as we said, they've got financial backing, so I don't see any reason why they can't do that again. Serie A is... We've gone from like Seven Sisters to having now 15 cousins.
And a couple of second cousins.
Yeah, because it's such a fluid environment in Serie A. Like, you look at Milan. Milan could finish, they won the league 3 years ago. They could be finishing outside the top 10 this season.
Yeah.
So Fiorentina made a push for Europe. Atalanta, of course.
And Sassuolo did play in Europe back in 2017. Yeah. Rapid Vienna, Genk, and also Athletic Bilbao. Group stage there, didn't get too far. But let's get to the Serie B broadcast this week. We're showing Sampdoria Palermo Saturday, March 8th at 4:15 GMT in the UK, two of Serie B's giants, they are. So then we've also got Brescia Cesena straight after that. That is good to go at 6:30. Go to destinationculture.com for more. We're going to have the lead-up articles there. Of course, the games are at tv.destinationculture.com or download the app on iOS or Android. Then we've also got Jonathan Klinsmann. He'll be back in action for Cesena away at Brescia there. So then Sassuolo Bari, Sunday at 2 p.m. Will Sassuolo do the job again? I mean, it's more mathematical, academic now, and Bari really need the win to try and cement themselves in the top four. Nearly made it up to Serie A a couple of years ago, if it wasn't for Claudio Ranieri denying them with Cagliari. So other big games in Serie A, Napoli, Fiorentina, Juve, Atalanta, as we've said on Sunday, big 6-pointers with Como Venezia at the other end, and also Genoa, Cagliari is another one. Genoa and Como are doing okay. Cagliari gave away points against Bologna. They were ahead. They then lost that 1-2-1. Can Roma make it 12 undefeated away at Empoli? Empoli need the win a high after beating Juventus, but still they need to back it up in Serie A now. Well, otherwise, they will be in Serie B on destinationculture.com. Next year being featured as well. AJ Menon says, ADM, Adriano Del Monte, is an absolute legend. Always fantastic to get his insight on all things culture. That's when he listened to last week's pod. If you also haven't seen that, go and check it out. Now you can leave your comments on our socials, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and X. That's it for this week. From me, David Faridi, Emmett Gates, and Dan Cantian. You can contact us on our own X accounts if you want. Dan, go for it.
I'm at Dan_Cantian.
I am at Emmett Gates.
At David Faridi with an underscore, but search my name, you'll find me anyway. Pretty sure. Yes, you can contact us there or go to the Destination Culture page itself, of course. That is at DSTN Culture for everything Italian football and culture. Be sure to join us every Thursday here on YouTube, also Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We have the audio pods there. Don't forget, you can watch all the action, the highlights on the DCTV app, the tv.destinationculture.com website for Serie B. Go there and download the app right now, iOS and Android. Stick with us this weekend on our socials as usual. The destination is always culture.